Remember me, though I have to say goodbye. Remember me, don't let it make you cry. For even if I'm far away, I hold you in my heart. I sing a secret song to you each night we are apart. Remember me, though I have to travel far. Remember me, each time you hear a sad guitar. Know that I'm with you the only way that I can be. Until you're in my arms again.
Listen, and all you desire will be yours. Welcome to Spider-Dan and the Secret Wars. Prepare for battle.
Choose a side in a Clone Wars.
Welcome to Prattle World. I am your host, the ever-amazing, ever-spectacular Spider-Dan. And in this podcast, I spotlight entertainment's best-kept secrets that a mainstream audience may find boring. And welcome to Clone Wars, where two similar pieces of media clash to be crowned champion. Two go in, and only one comes out. And welcome to our Dia de los Muertos episode. Ooh, I hope I pronounced that properly and didn't murder it. Megan's a Spanish teacher. I'm sure she'll tell me. But yes, we are doing a very special podcast being released on the Day of the Dead to celebrate all of that that encompasses it. And I'm welcoming back Megan and Mike. Mike has made two appearances this year. Shock horror. Can you believe it? He complained one year that he wasn't getting enough appearances on my show. And I was like, guy, I've only got so many spaces to fill and there wasn't enough room. But now he's here. He's dug his way in. He's drilled in. And Megan's here. And this serves as somewhat of an apology to Megan for what we made her watch last time as well.
And your favorite film.
It's not my new favorite film.
But luckily, this film has a lot less lactation in it.
It's one of its faults, actually. That's the problem with this film. It's not enough. That's it. Not enough lactation. You know, Visitor Q had enough.
Not enough leche.
Not enough lechery or awful things. But I imagine at least one of these films definitely made me cry. So I don't know if it made you cry as well again, Megan, or either of them.
Yeah, we didn't get to finish watching Coco because we just ran out of time. But okay, I have seen it a disgusting amount of times.
We both seen it a lot of times.
Yeah.
But before I met you, I'd seen it a handful of times. And then we've watched it together several times. And we watched it, obviously, last year for Disney Discussions.
If I had watched the end, it probably would have made me cry because it always does. It always makes me a bit teary.
Like, it was just the same with me. Like on cue, I'm like, fuck, you're doing it again. You're crying again because they've got you where it hurts or where you love, right in the old artery or the atrium or the ventricles or wherever all the love goes in the heart. It's science. That's how it works. So yes, if you haven't guessed or if you haven't read the title for the episode, we are doing a comparison, a Clone Wars podcast on The Book of Life and Coco due to their mass similarities. Guys, would you like to give me the honor of reading out the reasons for comparison?
Do it. You do it.
Go for it.
Yeah. Okay, here we go. There's a few. Hold on to your horses, and I'm sure there's many more, but these are ones I'm going to just say out loud in the meantime. So both of the films have a strong focus on music, including protagonists who secretly yearn to be a mariachi. Both families that forbid and discourage this desire, while both protagonists reject their family businesses. Both films have a character who is crushed beneath a bell and killed. Those would be the antagonists of the film. Each film features characters whose driving motivation is not to be forgotten. Both families have a pair of deceased twins who are side characters. The dead mother characters are both similar in looks in both films and both have grey streaks in their hair. Both films are set around the Day of the Dead and inspired by Spanish and South American culture. Both films star Cheech Marin and Gabriel Iglesias. Both films are available on Disney Plus. Go watch them now. Both films are released only 3 years apart, and both films featured actors dubbing their lines in both English and Spanish for international releases.
I have two more.
Do it. Go for it. Yes, more.
Both of them have a grandma in a wheelchair that dies at the end of the movie.
Spoilers, Megan. Spoilers.
Oh, are we allowed to do that?
Oh, my God. Oh, my God. Tonya's going to murder you now.
Oh, no. Don't get me.
Go on.
Then there's also a dance party featuring the living and the dead at the end of both
yes.
movies.
Yes. Yes, there is. There you go.
Of the grandmas have beard whiskers.
Yeah, and that's only natural. It's only natural. But yeah, excellent. And any from you, Mike? Did you see any other similarities?
No. I think you guys both cleared it. I had like two or three, and then it was like, da-da-da-da. Okay. Well, yeah. Dissipated into the wind.
It's all right. It's all right. I spend a lot of time bringing up these. I do a lot of research. I'm like, yeah. I do all of that. So don't worry about it. But
there's similar architecture in both movies as well, in the Land of the Dead.
Yeah, and I'm sure there's more that we'll figure out as we go along. And please send in your own. Tell us more. But I think that's enough for now. I think we've got another one. Let's get into the films because we've only got so much time. Well, actually, before we get started, Megan, would you like to tell us a little bit more about the Day of the Dead, as you are a Spanish teacher, learner of Spanish, and all ingratiated in the culture? So give us a little bit.
So now this is pressure, because if there's anyone that actually celebrates the Day of the Dead, I don't want to butcher it for you. The Day of the Dead, so it's on the 1st and 2nd of November. The actual Day of the Dead is the 2nd of November. And one of them is All Saints Day and one of them is All Souls Day. And I can't remember off the top of my head which one goes which. I think All Saints Day is the actual Day of the Dead. All Souls Day is the one that's dedicated to like young people that passed away. But it's a massive celebration in Mexico. Most households will have like an altar that has an ofrenda. And the whole premise is that it's for you to spend time with your family and to like thank those people that have like helped you along the way. And it's to celebrate family. When I teach this to kids, I always like, where it's not something that's in our culture, I think in our culture, death is kind of taboo. Like it's not really spoken about that much. When I had to, both my grandparents passed away in 2018. So like that was the first year that I'd really ever experienced someone dying. And it wasn't something that was ever really spoken about in my house. Whereas in Mexico, it's like part of their culture. Death is constantly spoken about. Day of the Dead, like when I explain this to kids, it's a day of celebration. It's not a day of sadness. It's a big fiesta. It's a big party. And it's like a way to honor those people that lived before. It's a day of family.
And what do you call it in Spanish?
Dia de los Muertos.
And that translates specifically
Day of the Dead. Mm-hmm. Yes. But there's like loads of different traditions that they have that link to Day of the Dead. Like there's specific food that they eat. There's like the specific flowers that they use, which you can see in Coco. I'm pretty sure you can see them in the Book of Life as well.
Marigolds.
They are marigolds in English. Mm-hmm. Yes. And you do see them in the Book of Life because when La Muerte like disappears, she leaves petals. These flowers are represented to like guide the spirits home.
Very beautiful. I like that though. I think, you know, it's I think you're right. There is something in the Western world where we don't want to talk about it. It's too painful, or we can't fully work through those emotions, or there's definitely something there. But I think it's similar in other cultures where it's more of a party. It's more of a, like a great, they're dead, brilliant, in a way, in a sense. Like they're going on to somewhere better. They've got that rest, they've got that relaxation, they're gonna have a great time.
I remember my nan had a go at me at my granddad's funeral. And she was like, "Why are you crying?" And I was like, "Because I'm sad." And she was like, "Granddad wouldn't want you to be sad. He would want you to be celebrating. He'd want you to be happy. Like, you're all here with your family. Like, let's celebrate." And I was like, "Granddad's dead." And Nan's like, "Why are you crying?" I'm like, "Nan, stop crying."
Okay, I'm happy now. I'm really happy. I think it's hard to navigate those kind of feelings. But I think this is a wonderful, like you could see this as quite, these ideas as quite morbid in a sense. You could see, you have children possibly dying, going into the Land of the Dead and, you know, not being able to come back, or bullfighting, all this sort of stuff. You could see it as quite a, maudlin kind of film, but actually you are right. It's kind of very celebratory and fun, and fast paced. And again, it makes you think and also makes you remember the people that you have lost as well. Right. Well, I think Mike hasn't done enough talking for once. So I think he is going to go and give us the synopsis for The Book of Life.
Oh God. I was more prepared for Coco. Let's see if I can remember this. So it starts off, obviously, there's a framing story of some kids who go to, is it a museum?
Yeah.
It is a museum.
Yeah, they're going on a museum.
And they're like naughtier kids and things. So they get taken on this kind of special tour by this this woman whose identity is not quite revealed.
She just works at the museum.
Oh, yes, that's all she does.
This is a tour guide.
Yes, of course, nothing else. And she teaches them about the Book of Life, which is like this. It's basically a storybook of, but has all life in it. It's the story of all life.
Yes.
It's quite small and it never grows in size. So I'm confused.
No, it does grow. It does grow in size.
It's mystical, magic. Mike. It doesn't need to have a physical form. It's an idea.
Yeah. Why are you hating so much on Ice Cube? Was it Ice Cube?
Well, yeah, Ice Cube is
the voice actor.
The god character.
We can rag on Star Wars, Mike, and talk about all the stuff that doesn't make sense in that if you want.
Oh, we could be here for a lot. I mean, we did that the other day with Phantom Menace. We did a podcast on that. But sorry, with A Book of Life. Yeah, so there's the framing story, and then it goes into the story of three main characters whose names I've completely forgotten, all three of them.
Manolo, Joaquin, and Maria, I want to say.
Yes, and so Joaquin and Manolo are essentially, they've got a rivalry trying to get Maria's hand, essentially. They fancy her, it's when they're kids, and they basically, it's the whole plot is about these two gods who bet on who's going to take the hand of Maria. And it's kind of, that's like, it's a framing story in a framing story in another story. It's three layered, and then in the story they talk about history of the place as well, and there's another layer within it. But essentially the story of these kids kind of when they're young and something that happens, and then they, when they've grown up and what people they are and the differences. And obviously a lot of the themes is what you mentioned, Dan, which is, am I allowed to call you Dan and not Spider Dan? Is that allowed?
I will allow it. As long as it's nothing derogatory, I'm okay with that.
Okay. but yes, anyway, Dan, it's essentially the idea, I'm drowning in trying to figure out the, there's so many plot lines going on in the film that trying to pinpoint one down, I suppose there's the bullfighting part, which is Joaquin, he doesn't want to be a bullfighter. He wants to be...
Incorrect. Manolo. Manolo doesn't want to be a bullfighter.
Can you do it? Yeah. Can you do this, Megan? I've seen this film like once or twice. And right. Megan's seen it like a million times, and I'm here drowning.
This is the only podcast I've ever heard where Mike doesn't want to talk for once. Like,
it's, and Coco, it's a... I know, like the back of my hand.
Right. Well, why don't you do Coco later? We'll let you off.
Megan, please continue from that shipwreck.
I wasn't really... I've lost it. I'm going to start from the start.
You weren't even listening to what I was saying.
I was trying to actually find something out. But,
oh my lord.
Mike, she's got all of the rest of her life to listen to you. It's fine.
That's true.
Yeah, that's right. Basically, yeah.
And maybe even in the land of the remembered as well.
Kids go to a museum, they go on a tour. Tour guide starts telling them about the Book of Life. It takes you to a little town called San Angel, I believe it's called. And you've got those three kids, Joaquin, Manolo, and Maria, because that's how his dad, always says it. Then it's just, it's like a little love triangle because the boys both want to be with Maria and Maria like likes both of them. But at that point, she's like an independent lady. She's always very fiery. She's very independent. She releases some pigs and then gets sent away to boarding school in Spain. And then it's the two kids are growing up, and this is set on the Day of the Dead. You find out that Manolo's mum has since passed away and that Joaquin's dad has also passed away, and that Joaquin's dad was a big warrior in the town and fought Chacal. But both of them have like these big boots to fill because he's got the one of his dad being the warrior and Manolo's got the one of his dad being a really good bullfighter. Then you listen to a song, I Will Wait For You by Mumford & Sons. You then pan some time, takes you forward a few years. They've gotten older. You see a little montage of them both becoming who they are as adults. And then, oh, Maria's coming back from Spain. How exciting.
The whole town is
the girl's mental. Back, the whatever they call her, the beauty of the town. And then it's just about their love story. And then in the process, do I, like, that's the plot. That's the main plot. Yeah, but the then you go into...
There's the God parts that I was
talking about. Right, so there's the God parts. So you've got Zibalba, which is like the Lord of the Land of the Remembered.
The Forgotten, isn't it? It's the Forgotten. Yeah.
Yeah.
Basically
and then, Hades.
Yeah. Yeah, effectively. And then...
And then you've got La Muerte.
La Muerte, yeah. And she is the Land of the Remembered.
He wants to become king of the Land of the Remembered. So they put a wager on the Manolo for... La Muerte will marry Maria and Joaquin will marry Maria for Zibalba, but he cheats. He bloody cheats.
Yeah, with the magic medal thing.
Yeah. But, and then inadvertently throughout the story, he ends up dying, goes to the land of the like dead. And then it's his story of trying to get back to the living.
And stop because also
Chacao's coming.
Yeah, this is a lot more complicated than I thought it would be to explain, but so Joaquin is picked by Zibalba, who is the evil Lord of the Dead, the Land of the Forgotten. And who knew he would be a bad guy with red skulls for pupils?
For, you know?
I love that
eyes.
Bit, yeah.
You know, who knew he'd be a bad guy? La Muerte takes the form of an old lady and says, can I have some of your bread that you've left for your ancestors? And Manolo says, yeah, absolutely, have some bread. They would want you to have that. And then Joaquin is, you know, this old man who is Zibalba goes over and says, you know, can I have some of your bread? And he goes, no, this is Robert, Dad. Get lost, you old weirdo. Which is a fair enough reaction.
And it's delicious, and then eats it in front of him.
Yeah.
Yep,
he's such a dick.
I love Joaquin, because every time he charges into battle or jumps into battle, he screams his own name. I love that. Joaquin!
Is that when I make love? It's what happens to
you. Why do you say stuff like that?
You might be dead by the evening. Will you be forgotten or will you be remembered? We'll find
out. I ain't putting your face up, am I, a friender?
But what he does is instead he trades the bread for a medal, and the medal gives him the ability to be invincible, basically. He can't be harmed or die. But Chacal once had it and has left him in a bad state. He's now, which I love, a cyborg for no particular reason. He's a cyborg. Why not? We're into it. Let's go.
No one else has never explained.
It's I mean, you've also explained. Got people that have swords for arms and legs in this film.
Yeah,
so.
True. Arms and legs are for cowards. Arms and legs are for cowards. So he keeps it and he's like, keep it a secret because Chacal will find out and come and get you and take it away from you. But he uses that to become like the best soldier in the town and protect everybody. And then he becomes the town hero. Manolo learns to be a bullfighter, but has not killed a bull yet. And this is like their big days when Maria comes in to watch the fight. He refuses to kill the bull. And his dad is like, you're not the greatest Sanchez ever. You're rubbish. And yeah, this is really complex. It's really
it's see what I mean?
Because like, that's not even the main part of the movie.
No,
like exactly. The main part of the movie realistically starts when he's down by the like boat area with Maria and then he gets bitten by the snake.
Yeah,
but that's like
he gets bitten by the snake twice specifically.
Yes. Because Maria gets bitten once and goes into a coma and then is awoken by Joaquin's kiss, and then Manolo gets bitten twice and dies because it's very Romeo and Juliet because he thinks he's dead and goes to the light. And he's like, oh, I'm here to find Maria. And they're like, she's not here, dude. You're dead. Oh shit. And then and then Zibalba's in his place in the Land of the Remembered, and he's like, I'm in charge now, and they're like, you lied, you broke your, you know, and then he goes off and goes further into the adventure. But that, in a nutshell, he's fighting to get back he was initially trying to save Maria, but now he has to get back to save the town because Chacal has found out about the medal and he's going to the town to destroy
it. Watch the film, guys.
it's hard, I didn't realize how hard it
I'm
would
glad
be
that it was I'm glad that I mean that you realized
I
when
didn't
you started
struggle.
You didn't struggle, but once you started saying certain things you're like
oh no, you need to
I have to think about
it
this.
It's a very convoluted,
there's essentially four layers to it.
Yeah,
and when I was like, oof.
but watching that, I don't feel like there's too many layers, but explaining it feels very complex. But like, how did you guys feel about this film? Have you seen it before? What are your feelings on it?
It's funny because I remember watching this film. So my friend who lives in America, we met in Spain, and she came to visit me one time and we saw that this film had come onto Netflix. So we were like, oh, let's give it a watch. And we both thought it was so fucking weird. I was like, what is this?
Megan, you thought the film was weird.
But not Bedknobs and Broomsticks.
Not that weird.
I remember not liking it at all. I was like, what is this? Absolute trash. And then I watched it again and I was like, actually, no, this is pretty good. And now I've seen it like so many times. when we watched this the other day, I was like, yeah, I only watched this like a couple of months ago. And Mike was like, what? And I was like, I watched it at the end of the year with one of my classes, because I can get away with watching Coco and this because they link to the Day of the Dead.
Absolutely.
So I'm like, I'm a Spanish teacher. It's educational. But yeah, no, I really like this film. I really, really like it.
Yeah. And I've seen it. This is only my second viewing of it. So I saw it once. I think it might have been during lockdown.
We watched it in Mexico.
Oh, did we? When we went to Mexico that time?
Yeah, when we went to Mexico, one of the evenings after we'd done like a day of excursions, we were really knackered and we'd been swimming and stuff. We watched the Book of Life on the iPad.
It's probably why I don't remember it as well. Because the first time, I didn't even remember. I thought we just watched it as a sort of normal film. I didn't realize, you know, obviously on the iPad in a Mexican hotel room. Like, I like the film. I do enjoy it. And there's certain parts I really like. I think the animation at the start feels a bit janky, but I think when it starts changing animation style, it really gets me. I'm like, and you kind of get more used to it. I know we're going to get onto sort of visuals and animation and things, but like as a film, I do enjoy it. But I think now watching it so close to Coco, and also I know Coco very well, a lot better. I've seen that film loads of times. I think that there's a comparison there where I think it hurts this film a little bit, not to give away any of my sort of thoughts on certain elements, but like, I think that there's certain elements that this film doesn't do that brilliantly, and it's not as smooth, especially the framing, the first layer of framing story with the kids in the museum. I've written down the reason it's there is to keep kids entertained, because when they're just spouting exposition, they can't have it for more than like a minute or two. Yeah. So they have to cut it in with a child asking what's going on or saying something silly or doing something cute. And then go back to the exposition dump. And I find that for me, as a near 30-year-old man, when I watch that, I'm like, can we just get back to the story, please? I was kind of getting into that. But because of the target audience, I think that's the reason it happens.
I guess that there are adults I know who will turn to you halfway through a film and go, what? What's going on? What's happening? Who's he? What's going on? So maybe in some aspects, some adults probably do need that to a degree. Of some kind of exposition. I didn't mind that so much, because I actually thought the kids were quite funny. Like, some of the stuff they were coming out with was quite humorous. But I get what you mean, though. I think that when they become the wooden figures, when the characters are the wooden figures, they look so much better than...
Yeah.
And again, I feel like that might have been a last-minute choice, the framing device, I think, because, again, it doesn't look as well animated. It doesn't look as smooth. It doesn't look as... It might have been like, this is all a bit weird. We need someone to explain it or to kind of just break it down a little bit so we can, you know, a bit more bite-sized, a bit more chewable, maybe the idea, some of the ideas and the grand... And again, there are a lot of layers, but it still kind of works for me to a degree. But I do get what you're saying there.
Yeah, and it's the music is a part of that as well, but I've got a lot of thoughts into that. But I noted that the animation made me think of a 3D Nickelodeon cartoon as well. That's kind of my... Somewhat in certain parts, not the wooden characters part necessarily, but the way all the character design is, because it's like with Coco, it's quite realistic and quite, well, it's a very well done. The humans look like humans in it a lot. Whereas in Book of Life, it's like gigantic nose and tiny little eyes and a weird shaped circle.
Huge warts.
Yeah, and like your like the man's body is a circle, and then this person's body is like a upside down and up there, sort of triangle.
Like arms on the matadors and massive. Yeah.
What's the baddie?
The baddie, Chakal.
Yeah,
Chakal. He's just like Kingpin in Spider-Man into Spider-Verse. Massive. He's just like a giant wall of a person. And it's like, this is more cartoony.
Yes, definitely.
And it feels more Nickelodeon adjacent. Not that that's necessarily a bad thing, but that's how it kind of feels. It feels almost more like a direct-to-video movie in a sense, like a Nickelodeon kind of style.
I think what it is it's stylized. I think it's the stylization. And I think what I like about it is it's a Guillermo del Toro produced product. And it does remind me a little bit of the Pinocchio film he did, which I adored. I thought it was really good. But he's going specifically to go, let's make this character as hideous as possible because it's interesting.
Yeah.
You know, let's give him the crooked bent nose that's bent five times. You know, it's not humanly possible.
Yeah, they're caricatures, aren't they?
Yeah, they're absolutely bizarre and weird. And they're taken to these that are absolute like extreme. Like how weird can we make this guy look in the background? Like how fucking weird can we make this guy? He's only in it for 2 seconds, but let's just make him as weird as fuck.
But I think that's just him as a director, though, isn't it? Because like Pan's Labyrinth is fucking weird as well.
Yeah.
Well, a lot of the things he does. But I will say that's not a criticism of it. Because the reason I can say Nickelodeon and direct-to-video is because I'm thinking like Ren and Stimpy and those sort of late-night Nick shows or Cartoon Network sort of late shows.
There's a Jimmy Neutron aspect to those kids at the start. I can definitely see them in Jimmy Neutron.
Yeah, that's what I mean. I just get Nickelodeon vibes a lot more than anything.
What do you think to the animation style, Megan?
I think I've gotten used to it over time. I distinctly remember that one of the things that I didn't like about this film when I first watched it was I didn't like the animation. I'm not as big of a fan of the animation in this movie, but as I said, I think because I've seen it so many times, I've just become adjusted to the weirdness. It's a bit too weird for my liking, but I've just kind of become accustomed to it.
Because the framing story, then the wooden story, then the aspects where it's in heaven and the hell and the kind of the Muerte and Zabulba, but then also flashbacks are in 2D, as in like 2D cartoons. So they're all, there's four different styles essentially within the one film. And again, it doesn't feel like it's too much, but there is, if you really like one style a lot and it doesn't come up again, it's like, oh, I'm back to this style. And that's something that can be jarring for some people.
I think it does move on at a pace as well. Like there's no moment where I'm like, you know, we can really sit with this. Mm-hmm. It's like, oh, the love scene. We've done the love scene. Oh, no, they're jealous. Now they're getting engaged. Now, oh, shit, right now they're dead.
There's no breathing room.
Yeah, there's no breathe. But again, I don't hate that aspect. Mm-hmm. I like that it's a kind of a rip-roaring, swashbuckling adventure. I quite enjoy that aspect. And again, we're going through all these different worlds and stuff. And again, it's very Guillermo del Toro. It's interesting you say about the design and the art style. The producers of it said we need to make them more human. They can't be these wooden creatures. They can't be these dolls or puppets or toys or whatever they are. And then the director was like, no, this is the style. We're going to stick with it. This is how it is. And they were like, no one's going to watch a film with dolls in. And he went, what about Toy Story? And they looked at him like, what do you mean? And he was like, right, okay, you don't get it. But it was 20th Century Fox that put this together, so they've made quite a few mistakes in their filmmaking career, so much so they're no longer around. So they
eaten by Disney.
Eaten by Disney. They're like, we'll have that Marvel property, thank you very much. You got X-Men, have you? Fantastic Four, yeah. Thank you very much. And again, this came, you know, that's why it's on Disney Plus. And yeah, I get why people, you know, wouldn't necessarily gel with that. And I imagine that's why they did the, oh, these are toys and these are dolls. Look at these kids looking at the dolls that the story is about. So, but I dig the style. I think it's not maybe beautiful to look at in a way, but there's a beautiful ugliness to it, I think. Like this, they've gone out of their way to do it. I think there's the same critique towards the new Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle film that came out. Mm. Like all the characters look really fucking like, there's like a normal woman who's like really angular box person. And you're like, they didn't have to design her like that, but they did. And it's interesting. It's definitely interesting. Whether you love it or hate it, it's interesting to look at. What did we think of like the love story in it? Because it is quite, there's quite a huge focus on that. So let's talk about Maria, Joaquin and Manolo's love story. Let's talk about that. What did we think of that? How do you think that works? Or is there...
I think you can kind of tell where it's going. I'm sorry, I'm going to sneeze. I'm making Dan do so many edits. I'm sorry.
I edit a lot anyway. It's fine.
What were we saying?
The love story between Joaquin, Maria, and Manolo. How did we feel?
Sneezed my idea out of me. Did you both see that?
Yeah.
Oh, I'm having this cold.
We're doing so well.
I think the cold is, this is the worst I've performed. I think Dan's put a curse on me just to get me back.
You're being forgotten, Mike, already.
That is happening.
Let me check your tummy. We've got skeleton thing.
Yeah. It'll be my hand first. Yes. So the love story. I think that it's quite obvious that Joaquin is bit of a dick. Do you know what I mean? That's the right character, isn't it?
Joaquin
is Channing Tatum.
Yeah. Channing Tatum.
Yeah, and so he's like, you can tell there's moments where he's like, ah, and it just wouldn't be right, Maria getting with him.
Yeah.
So it's kind of from the start, you're like, I know where this is kind of going to go. And like the God of the Dead.
You know she's going to end up with the sensitive one.
And the God of the Dead isn't going to win this, because then he would just take over and it'd be the end of the film. It'd be a real downer. And it's like, you know, that'd be a cool film. I'd like to see that in the sequel of like the whole world going into chaos, because that would be a very dark, that'd be like a Coraline-esque film. But which Megan hates Coraline. I adore it. One of my favorites. But yeah, I think that the love story is all right. It's, although it is a central part of the film, it doesn't, the word love, and I think the amount of physical interaction between the main characters and Maria is so minimal that I think it works, because it kind of does, it has an innocence to it in a way, almost like, I don't know why I think this, but almost like Stand By Me, you know, when you've, where the kids are like just young enough before they lose that innocence, especially obviously because half, or I don't know what fraction of the film, but a fraction of the film is when they're young. And that's a lot more of that innocent kind of, we're all friends, but the guys are kind of got a rivalry and things. And then when they're older, it's like how this can manifest in more, in worse ways, how friendships can break and how who you are can really affect like a lot of elements in your life, like growing up and all this. So it can go quite deep into it in a sense, but Maria as a character isn't compromised by that. And I think that's one of the strongest parts of the film, is that she is, as Megan said earlier, she's strong. She's a badass. Like, you can see why they're both vying for her, because she's amazing. She's so cool. And
she's also loyal, because the only reason that she was going to get married to Joaquin was to save the town.
Yeah. So what do you think of the three? Because I've just waffled on about Maria.
Yeah, it's predictable. You know, she's going to end up with Manolo. Like you'd be angry if she ended up with Joaquin, really.
And also Joaquin is like, because the dad, would you like to do your impression of the dad again, Megan?
Maria!
Pitch perfect. he is manipulating kind of Maria and Joaquin together, because he thinks Joaquin is going to leave, and because he's invincible, or everyone believes him to be invincible, even though they don't know about the medal, they just know how good a hero he is. They're like, if you don't marry him, he'll leave. Even though he doesn't say anything about leaving.
No, he doesn't mention it.
He's never like, I'm going to go off and do shit. He's literally,
he left.
Like,
he stayed.
Yeah. Well, no, she didn't. She was forced to leave.
But she went and he stayed, didn't he? And then he kind of travelled a bit and then he came back.
Who, Joaquin? Yeah, he didn't leave because he was a child.
Yeah, exactly. Well, okay, yeah.
Travelling to a completely different country on the other side of the planet.
Well, she did.
Guys.
She was at a boarding school.
Why would he go anywhere else? Mexico is literally the centre of the universe.
This is true.
In this film, it is the centre of the universe. And
sure. Also, the funny thing that I find about this, why send her to Spain? Like, why send her to Spain? Surely there are Catholic boarding schools in Mexico. Why send her all the way to Spain? Yeah. So bizarre.
And what relevance does that have specifically? Just a nod to be like, we owe a lot of our culture to you. Go Spain. But it doesn't ever mention again. It's
maybe, like... maybe there's a specific nunnery or something she had to go to, or I'm not sure, whatever. But yeah, like there's that moment where he's like, she's like, Manolo's dead. He's just died. And then the dad's like, well, Joaquin is clearly going to leave. He's not. But then she's like, you better marry him. And she's like, well, will you leave? Or will you? No, that's it. She goes, will you stay if I marry you? And he's like, yeah. And I was kind of like, you don't say that. You just forced her into a marriage she doesn't want to be in. You don't want that. She doesn't want that. The town and the mayor clearly do. But yeah, I was like, bad move, Joaquin. I liked you a little bit. And now I'm a bit like, that's a bit weird and creepy.
Yeah, he's a bit of a douche, that's how I describe him. They're all flawed characters, though. Well, yeah, except seemingly Maria doesn't seem to have many issues, but like mainly Joaquin and
Manolo.
They have that. They're both flawed in different ways, to kind of the opposite ends of the spectrum. And it's kind of always Maria's like the center in a way, and it's kind of balancing. So I do like that. Although the love story of Zabulba and La Muerta, it's more playful and I think it's fun. But I think the animation of the two of them.
Mm. La Muerte is cool. Beautiful.
She is amazing.
Gorgeous.
So in Mexican culture, they've got a specific skeleton that comes out a lot at Day of the Dead called La Catrina. And I think a lot of these like skeletal beings, like the two mums that have the white stripe in their hair, they all kind of link back to Katrina, who is like,
I read on IMDb they combined, I think, Katrina and La Muerte together, I think, for this, the design and what she does and how she does it and things. I think they just kind of mashed them together because they were quite similar. I think that's what I read anyway.
They're my favorite part of the film, those two.
Yeah,
I could just, you know, watch them interact.
Their relationship and love story is far more interesting, frankly. I feel like the love story is a bit of a launching pad for the rest of the story, because it's not really about the love story. It's there, but it kind of drapes everything else, the cosmic battle, the, you know, the battle for the town and everything. I wanted to ask you about some of maybe the background characters in the film, because there's a lot of kind of interesting background characters, like the nuns in there and the luchador priest. I quite enjoyed.
They have one of my favorite lines. It's when, like, I think Joaquin saves the town, classic standard Joaquin, and they all go, gracias! And I'm just like, it's so good. It's so funny.
I like the little pig that just goes, bleh!
I love the piggy.
The piggy. Yeah. You love the piggy, because she takes the piggy with her, doesn't she?
Yeah, she takes him to Spain.
I do quite like all the voices that one can recognise. Like when Danny Trejo popped up, I was like, my boy! Like, yeah, that sort of thing. And I think the mariachi band are, obviously, I think one of them is Cheech.
Yeah, one of them is Cheech Marin, yeah.
Yeah, and I think that they're quite funny, and they're just kind of, they do that kind of thing. It's a bit of a trope, but they kind of almost say what the audience is thinking at certain points. Like, why is this weird thing happening? Or what's going on there? And then at other points, they're like, I don't care anymore. Like, I'm just
doing my own thing. They roll into the bar.
Yeah, they just, everything they do is so extra. And I'm like, I love it.
I love that bit where because they all try and sing a song for Maria, and they all get like the pig drops a plant pot on each and every one of them. And then the last one, he doesn't even get a chance to sing the song. It has a big cactus drop on him. And then that's funny in itself. But then they roll off, like you said, roll off into the bar, and then Manolo starts singing his ballad, and they all pop their heads out of the bar, but he's still got the cactus on his head. those little touches. I think the humor in this is really strong. It's one of the things that kind of keeps me going. Like, some of it's like immature and silly and stupid, but I think that there's enough going on at every point where I'm like, this is kind of charming. This is funny. This is, you know, even the jokes where I'm like, oh yeah, that's a bit touchy one. I'm like, actually, that's kind of good. But yeah, I like the conquistador character when he goes into the land of the dead and he's meeting all his ancestors. And he's like, I'm the one who fought a bull without the flag, the red flag, whatever it's called, and then he goes on to the next ancestor, and he was like, I was the first one to fight a bull with one arm and one leg, and he goes, arms and legs are for cowards. it was my favorite line in the whole thing, I think. Arms and legs are for cowards.
Is that the opera singer one?
Yes, yeah, he's a musician as well. Wanted to be a musician, but he had to follow the tradition of bullfighting. Like, again, that's a theme that runs through both, is that there's characters like, oh, I actually went to sing, or I did sing, or I used to do music, but no more. I must follow this business. I really dug those characters. Ice Cube's in this as well as the candle maker.
He is, and he's having fun. As in, his voice makes it sound like he's not really miserable, which is what he's like in the vast majority of movies he's in.
Yeah, I think...
Nothing against it, but that is his personality in most, like, 20... the Jump Street movies and a lot of other recent comedy movies. He's always the gruff.
Yeah, he's like, the 21 Jump Street starring Channing Tatum as well. I quite enjoy those as well.
I love
those films. I love those films.
So good.
They're so good. My name is Jeff. yeah, I want to ask, because a big part of Day of the Dead is the music and the culture along with that, and it's a big part of both of these films. What do you think about the music, the score, the soundtrack of Book of Life?
I wasn't a fan.
But Mike doesn't like covers.
Right.
I like covers only if I like the original song.
Ah.
Because I'm, as I call it, as kind of tongue-in-cheek, genre fluid. So I like all genres of music, essentially.
Yes. Okay.
From death metal to classical to rap, all those sort of stuff. So when you change the genre, when you cover a song, you either change the genre or do your own version of it. That very, very, very rarely makes any difference to me, because I'm all about, you know, do I like the song? Yes or no? That's the melody normally I like, or right, the lyrics, or kind of, you go from there. So when it's a cover, it's like, yeah, there's covers I like more than the originals, but there's almost none I can think of that I don't like both. So I heard these covers and I was like, these are all right. Diego Luna isn't a bad singer. Mm. He's not a great singer, but it's all right. And I'm like, it's just kind of a guy with a guitar singing a few songs throughout the film. And I'm like, I'm not that fussed, you know, especially when you compare it to the other film that we're watching. Can't even say his name. But
The name that should not, the film that should not be named.
So we're talking about Book of Life. But yeah, that was mine. I looked up, I think there's two original songs.
There's four original songs.
Oh, four, there we go. And I like
actually,
that.
Mike. Actually.
It's only because I looked it up myself earlier.
It does have that jukebox musical feel. So I know people can absolutely turn off because of that. But yeah, what about you, Megan?
I like it. I think there's only really a couple of songs in there that I don't really like that much. Like, I'm not a big fan of the one that he sings to the bull when he's about to fight. Like
the apology song, I think.
The big, big bull. I'm sorry, dear Toro.
Spot on. Spot on again. Spot on again. Amazing.
Yeah, otherwise, like, I like Mumford & Sons. So whenever that song comes on, I'm like, I will wait. I will wait.
I've heard it more times than I ever need to in my life ever again. I don't mind the song.
I was quite surprised when they covered Creep. I was like, this is an interesting choice and doesn't really fit anything that's
going
on.
No, it doesn't. That song doesn't fit.
I was like, this doesn't work because that song's not really about what this is about. And
no.
I've always found that song out of place. I don't think the soundtrack is particularly strong, but I don't mind it.
I will say that when they do cover a song, they don't do it for very long. So there is that. Mm. It's very brief. You know, you got what I need. You know,
you know, they got not a friend.
Like, at least it's like, it's brief. If even if you don't like it, I think Diego Luna is not bad though as a singer. I think there's.
I don't think he's horrendous. No,
I think he's not.
He's
bad.
All right.
That's how I describe him. Six,
not
7 out of 10.
Bad. Yeah, this is a very weird Cassian Andor spin-off, isn't it?
It is. Yeah. It was his life. He had a gap year.
A gap year.
Yeah. And then he fell into this magical realm and lived an entire life there. And then when he died, he came back.
In San Angel.
And then spoilers for Rogue One, but after that he's like, oh, fucking hell, I'm here again. Shit. Oh, how do I get out of this time? many spies died. but yeah, I kind of have the same feeling. I don't mind the songs. I don't think they're amazing, but I think there's something to them when they're not covers or versions of, you know, Spanish songs or Mexican songs. I think it is lacking, but it's not. I don't think it's as important as. Music, I think, in Coco is much more important. It's very much character in the film and a big part of the... It's the push for everything. Like, the love story is kind of the push for this one, and then the music is kind of the push for that one as well, and the family and stuff. I like that this one's a bit more kind of action-packed, I think, more so than Coco. Like, it's got, you know... I think one of the coolest bits for me is when he does that amazing uppercut coming out of basically the land of the dead into like uppercutting into Chakal's chin. I thought I was like, that's fucking sick.
When they're fighting Chakal, like, because with all these like robotic limbs and things, and then when all the dead other bullfighters come out,
yeah,
they join the one who's like, you know, arms, legs are for wusses or whatever, and he's like spinning on his, he's doing like a pirouette.
He's singing at the same time.
Yeah, he's doing like a pirouette on his blade leg while his arms are out, and one of them is a sword. So it's like, all that stuff was quite, it felt pre Into the Spider-Verse for me. Do you know what I mean? Like that kind of, that feel.
Yeah, definitely.
It was kind of going for that almost missing out frames, but not, but intentionally, you know what I mean? Like adjacent to Mad Max Fury Road in some ways.
Yeah, like breaking the animation rules on purpose for a reason. Yeah, I can see it. I can definitely see that. I thought that whole ending sequence is very like, I was like, I'm pumped for this. I'm ready. Yeah, bring it on. So I quite enjoyed that aspect. Again, you know, it's not in Coco, but that's not really the story of Coco. It's a very different, even though we have gone over the similarities and there are many, they are still very, very different films as well. Is there anything else you like to say about Book of Life? Is there anything you like to bring up or mention?
The only thing that I will say that I've only found this out like today when I was doing a smidge of research is that the weird like trials that Manolo has to do when he's trying to get to the Land of the Forgotten to go and see La Muerte, they are challenges that are reminiscent of the trials that the dead would face in the Mayan religion.
Oh, wow.
Which I thought was really cool.
It's a deep cut.
It's good.
Anything else, Mike?
No, I think it's just a cool, fun film. I think it's just it's lighthearted. I feel like with it and Coco, they're aimed at slightly different age brackets.
Yes.
And I feel like Book of Life is more for the younger end, and then maybe a gap in the higher end, whereas Coco's more everyone in the middle, loosely.
Yeah.
Not exclusively, but I just feel like Book of Life, it's got it has more elements that I could understand people not liking as much, even though I do like it.
I feel like it's a more polarizing movie because there's so many kids that when I talk to them about like The Day of the Dead, automatically they're either saying, oh, I've seen Coco or I've seen The Book of Life or both or whatever. But like, I find that there's more people that are kind of like Marmite with Book of Life, where they're either I love it or I hate it. There's no real person that I've met that's just like, yeah, it's okay. It's either like I really enjoy it or I really don't like it. Whereas Coco, I feel like there's a higher percentage of people that enjoy it. It's not really quite as polarizing. It's just more...
I think it's more elements.
It's more friendly, I guess.
There's more elements to Book of Life, I think. I think because of, you know, the four animation styles and also the covers plus original songs, plus the action
set
pieces.
So it's more accessible.
Yeah, plus two in the framing stories, you've also got when they're kids and when they're adults. Whereas Coco is only like, what, maybe a day?
Well, yeah, it happens in about 24 hours.
Whereas Book of Life is Book of Life. Like, it spans over essentially a decade or so, plus the framing stories, etc. So I think there's more that could switch people off. But I think that if you are into that, I could see it being a higher... I think if you've got everyone's like ratings of this film, of Book of Life, a lot more would be above their rating of Coco and a lot would be below Coco. But I wonder if you averaged it out, it would
even out.
People choose for Coco?
Yeah. I think in a way, the Book of Life has a more traditional, classic kind of story structure, you know, like myths and legends and stuff, that kind of the way, you know, the hero's journey type thing. It's very stereotypically that. But then obviously there's more layers to it and various things going on. So in that respect, it's more traditional than, say, Coco. But I also think Coco can get it on a different level. You can just like grasp the sense of it. And it doesn't matter if you like action adventure or you're not into that kind of, you know, violent bandit, you know, whole town versus a bandit, you know, kind of thing. So I think, I can see why people would be put off Coco, but I could also see why people would be put off this as well. If you were, you know, we are directly comparing them because that's the point. but, you know, I can see where people would be turned off of both, I think, on some level. There was a word of a sequel to The Book of Life at one point. The director said, yeah, we're working on it. It's on ongoing. And there was even a poster mocked up. I think I found it online, which looked quite interesting, probably a bit darker. It was looking like more intense and stuff. So it could have been interesting, but unfortunately it was not to be. And I don't know if maybe the next film had something to do with that, perhaps. but I think now is a good time to talk about Coco. And Mike, now is your time to shine. Use the brain now it's working to give us the plot. Give us the plot of Coco.
Okay, so you've got a family and they essentially hate music because the great-great-grandfather left the mother to Imelda to go off and pursue a career in music.
Now he knows names. Now he knows the characters' names.
Oh, I know a lot of characters' names in Coco, I'd say. I know about four probably. So Miguel, is that pronunciation correct?
Miguel.
So Miguel, he's the main kind of character. He's the youngest in this whole family, and he loves music. And he idolizes the character De La Cruz. And he's this very famous, that's his name, isn't it?
Ernesto De La Cruz. Yeah.
Ernesto De La Cruz. So he's
doubting himself now. He's doubting himself.
Because I saw a look. I saw a
it's
look.
It's just because you said his surname and not the full name.
It's because they keep saying De La Cruz. So that's how I'm kind of remembering it. But he's this famous singer-songwriter and movie star and stuff that Miguel really idolizes and things. And so he wants to pursue music. His family hates music. And it starts off him trying to get into a talent show, that kind of things. But his family find out, his grandmother breaks the guitar. What?
It makes me so angry.
Yeah, with the whole like smashing the guitar in front of him. Because
why
he wants
in
to
all
music?
The Spanish speaking films, like the Disney characters that are Spanish speaking, are all the grandmas like villains? Like
generational trauma.
Like, she's not a villain, but it's such a mean thing to do.
Yeah, I mean, she does kind of start off as one until he kind of sees her at all.
No music!
But eventually he basically tries to steal a guitar that's in the crypt of De La Cruz, and he grabs it and takes it, and then it transforms into the spirit world, and he goes there, and then he meets with his family who have passed away, and it's him trying to find a way back because he has to get the blessing from his family. But the figurehead of the family, Imelda, she hates music still and won't give him the blessing without saying, if you go back, you can never play music. And he's like, yeah, all right. And he takes it, goes back, immediately plays a guitar within 3 seconds, and then finds himself back in the spirit world. So it has to be a blessing with no like additional like add-ons, no conditions.
Caveats.
And yeah, caveats. So then it's him finding his way in the spirit world, trying to find De La Cruz, who he believes is his grandfather. And then along the way, he meets Hector, who, spoiler alert, is his great-great-grandfather. And it's their journey together, their journey of bonding, kind of, you know, being... mainly Hector being less insufferable, and Miguel kind of finding himself and going through this crazy world of the land of the dead and really discovering and himself, but also his culture and his family and the important things. And it's his whole journey. And then eventually, you know, he, spoiler alert, he gets back to his family, and then he has a new lease on life.
I mean, you've missed out a big chunk there, but yeah.
Yeah, there's a whole De La Cruz thing, the Hector stuff, but that was...
who he believes to be his great-great-grandfather. Yes. He's actually a murderer and murdered his great-great-grandfather.
Yeah, and he actually murdered... That was a good point, yeah. So De La Cruz murdered Hector, and basically all the songs that made De La Cruz famous were all written by Hector. And so his whole musical... Miguel's musical love and, like, the thing that makes him so musical basically comes from Hector. He thought it was De La Cruz, but De La Cruz is a horrible...
That's why you should
person.
Never meet your heroes.
When this scenario he did, and that's what actually allowed him to meet his real great grandfather. And then, yeah, and the whole thing is because there's no pictures on the
ofrenda.
So because of that, if there's no picture of you on the ofrenda and no one remembers you, so if there's no picture of you, you can't journey to the real world from the spirit world on the Day of the Dead. And if there's no picture of you, you can't do that. But if people remember you, you stay alive in the spirit world. But if people forget you, then you're gone from the spirit world. So I said that in a really khaki way, but you get the gist.
Yeah.
I think that's most beats. And there's cool other things. Visually is cool. And there's, what's those creatures?
Alebrijes.
Alebrijes.
Yeah.
So there's a fun dog, Dante.
He's an alebrije.
And I think that his whole thing, it's kind of a tongue-in-cheek nod to Dante's Inferno, that kind of thing as well. But yeah, I think that's
it. He's also named after De La Cruz's horse.
Of course, because he's a fan of De La Cruz.
Mm-hmm. And there's a lot of Pixar references in this.
Yeah, there's a lot of Easter eggs in this movie.
I remember us going through it on Disney Discussions. I will link it in the show notes, Disney Discussion, because Megan led that and had a wonderful amount of things to say, and that's partially why we're doing this as well. And again, for the apologies for the lactation and all the other stuff we saw. I'm so sorry. I apologize to everyone. It was Mike's fault, really. I just gave him a platform to be weird. That's it.
To be fair, you didn't even realize I was going to be doing the podcast. You thought I was going to go elsewhere.
I also didn't think you'd be watching. So I was like, because he said it's really weird. I kind of did a little bit of research. I was like, Megan's not going to be up for this. She's here. and now she's crying.
And now she's in the garden crying.
Now we've upset her. What a lovely... Quick, put on Eurovision now. Do it now. Stat.
I timed it well though, didn't I? Did it well.
I'm so glad we didn't watch him the other way
around. Eurovision then visit a queue.
And there's me in my bed like, why did we watch them that way around? Oh God. Oh dear. Anyway, yes, Coco. Beautiful, beautiful film. Natalie, who I've done Disney podcasts before, she showed it me for the first time, and we both had a cry at the bit that everyone has a cry at. But yeah, what wonderful, wonderful film. Megan, tell us how you feel about Coco, because you've always got a lot to say on this.
I love this film. And like, it's a shame really, because I get to watch it fairly often. Well, it's not that often, but I get to watch it semi often, but I never get to fucking finish it. I never get to see the ending. I always get up to the bit more or less where they get thrown into the sinkhole, and then the family come and Pepita's there and they get saved from the cenote. Yeah, then I never actually get to finish the movie. But I love this film. I think it's so good. I think visually it's just stunning. I think the first time that I watched Coco, it made me teary when I just watched it, because it's just so visually it's just aesthetically pleasing. And I just really like it because it's just such a good representation of like the Day of the Dead. And it's nice that I know that obviously the Book of Life did it first, but it's nice to have a different culture represented in such a big company when you haven't really had like anything like this before, because when I was doing like some research earlier, obviously this film came out whatever year it came out, when
I want to say
2010-ish,
2017, I think.
I wanted to say 2017 as well. Yeah, I think it was
5 years ago, 6 years ago.
Yeah.
Wow.
I think it started like some production in 2013, but there were like some issues with actually trying to get it off the ground because Disney were like, no. No different cultures.
Get away.
They had Book of Life. That's all they get. Mexican and Spanish cultures. That's all. They get one. You only get one. That's
one every decade. And they had Nacho Libre, but that didn't count. Yes, it did. Jesus. That's not a good film.
Oh, dear.
Yeah, I just think it's really, really cool. And I love the fact that they speak so much Spanish in this film.
Yes. Yeah.
Like, they do speak a little bit of Spanish in the Book of Life, but in this movie, they actively speak loads of Spanish because... We were watching it just before this podcast and we had subtitles on just because for some reason they were still on and we just didn't turn them off.
We have one for certain things we watch.
And then they're like, I've never, because where I speak Spanish, I don't necessarily recognize all the time how often of one language they're speaking, especially in like a Disney film like this. Like if we're watching like Narcos, then obviously they speak this like massive chunks of Spanish. But it's quite nice having so much Spanish being spoken in like what is an American film. But yeah, I thought that was really cool. I really like this film. I think it's so good.
Did you see it at the cinema when it came out?
No, I don't think I did. No, I have absolutely no idea.
You didn't know when you first watched it?
No, I actually don't know when I first watched it. Hmm. I've just seen it so many times.
Yeah, I can't remember when I first saw it. I don't know if I saw it at the cinema. I think it was a year before we met. So I can't remember if I was still in the phase of when I had the Limitless card.
And I've definitely seen it before I met you. Yeah. So I must have seen it within the first year of it coming out.
And I've seen it a couple of times before I saw it with you. So really? I don't know. Yeah, I've seen it quite a few times, but I can't remember when. But I've always enjoyed it. You know, it's been one of those films where, for me, it's always been a silver or bronze place. I find I think it's among the best Disney Pixar films. It's just not, it's not quite my favorite ones, you know. We did Disney discussions and stuff, but I think Moana for me is my favorite.
Yeah,
I love Hercules. I also love Brave. Yeah, but no one else seems to like Brave as
Hercules
much as I do.
Hercules isn't Disney Pixar though.
No, I know, but I'm just saying like my top films are those kind of films as we discussed in Disney discussions. But like Brave, I adore Brave, and I love Tangled as well. Like a lot of the newer ones are great, but some of the old school ones like Monsters Inc. is probably my favorite older one. But with Coco, it's always just in the era it was released, the kind of the newer Disney Pixar films, the last, you know, decade or so, for me, it's not quite the top, but it's just, it's a very important film. And it's the kind of film that when we eventually have kids and stuff, I want to show them it because it's a really important film about, you know, it's very rare to have a film that balances family and chasing your dreams. You know, what usually it was like older films as family and then newer films is like, don't let anyone drag you down, go to the big city and achieve your dreams no matter what. And this film is kind of like, do that. But your family are also really important. And a lot of when your family are being angry or things like that, it comes from pain. And a lot of the time when you understand why a certain family member acts in a certain way about a certain thing, you can kind of understand them. You can maybe, you know, get to their level a little bit more if you can understand why they're acting irrationally, why the grandmother was like smashing the guitar, why the magic stuff hurts so much and what it's done to the family. Like when you start the film in Miguel's perspective, you're like, why is everyone being such a dick? And then you find out all that happened, you're like, oh, this is, they never knew. And that's Hector's whole, the weight he's carrying is that he never got to tell them he didn't abandon them ever. They still think he just abandoned them all and he cared about them more than anything.
Yeah, I did kind of think there was maybe a few like holes maybe or plot holes in it the more I kind of thought about it this time, because the first time I was kind of like, I've never seen it. The second time I was like, right, let's watch this for Disney discussions. And this time I was like, let's be a bit more critical. And I was like, why has Hector never told Imelda this?
I think he's tried. I think it insinuated that he has tried because She was like, get away from me. There was a particular line just before we came up to do the podcast where I think it insinuated that he had tried to get in contact with her, but she wasn't having any of it because she's a feisty, independent woman.
How many times do I have to tell you?
How many times do I have to tell you
I don't want anything to do with you and your music?
How many times do I have to turn you away, I think is what she says.
Yes. Yeah. So, I mean, I granted they don't make it super obvious, but I think that she is, as Megan says, a very strong woman.
Also, I don't know how do the Ofrendas work in regards to like marrying into the family? Do they Are they on both? Are two offenders? Are they on one offender?
You can have as many people and as many offenders.
Yeah. Do they have
like,
to
I
be...
mean, one of the people that crosses the bridge is on his dentist's offender. He's just on his dentist's desk.
That's a line we heard today. Like, yeah,
that's one of the characters that crosses the bridge.
Oh, yes.
Because also, obviously, everyone that's got pictures up of Dela Cruz, they're not going to be his family.
Exactly.
They're just fans. And all of the ones for like Frida Kahlo, for example.
But that's why their stuff is so much. He says,
yeah,
so
that's
many
why
people,
it's piled and piled and piled.
The
and
more
piled,
they remember,
having
the,
so many offerings.
But here's spoilers for the film. But here's my other thing as well, where Hector says it has to be someone you've known in your life who remembers you, that puts up the picture and that can remember you while on Earth. Spoilers: the film ends. Coco remembers, and she dies and comes over. Now, nobody else in life has known Hector. And has put his picture up. So once Coco dies, how is he still remembered?
Well, I think.
But I think it's because it's because his picture is up.
Right. Okay. Because
no one knew Dela Cruz, I suppose, personally.
Yeah, I guess.
So obviously Miguel can still. It is a weird one because he obviously goes to the land of the dead and then comes back. So he does remember meeting him.
Sure, of course.
But I think it's the fact that the picture specifically has been put back together. Right.
Okay.
I think it works almost like a tier system where the photo is gold tier. That's what you want. You want your photo to be up somewhere. Then you can not only live in the spirit world, what they call it?
You can go back.
You can also go back and forth. Whereas if you don't have that, the only thing keeping you alive is someone's memory.
Right. Got it.
I think.
Okay. Yeah, I can buy that. That was just my thing. I was like, well, if she's gone and he can't, because if they hadn't specifically mentioned that, but they need to specifically mention it because you need the stakes at the end of Hector being forgotten. So I get it, but part of me is like, does it? I don't know if it entirely translates or works. But again, these are very minor nitpicks in a very beautiful film. Don't get me wrong. I was just kind of thinking, I wanted to be a bit more critical this time around and kind of see if there's, you know, does it work? But yeah, I think it's wonderful. I think, again, the design is beautiful. The characters, the sugar skull aspect of it. I love that they have other famous Mexican people in there, Frida Kahlo and the Saint El Santo, the wrestler who was, you know, big popular movie star and everything. I love that. And I love that it's, again, like it could be a very kind of, you know, dark or depressing or mournful thing, this going in, a kid dying and going to the, but again, it's a celebration of everything that's come before and that's going to come in the future as well. And what makes them who they are and their lineage and everything. You know, I there's so many like wonderful, again, little side characters. Do you guys have some of your favorites in there as well?
I mean, I love Dante, the dog. I know it's kind of a cop out because it's the animal companion, but he's so silly and dopey. And I just love animals when, like, I like cute animals, but I love dumb animals. Hmm. So like in Moana, when you've got the stupid chicken, he's just a burden the entire time. Cracks me up. And then with Dante, he's got like heart of gold, but he's an idiot. And I love that. I love stupid animals that mean well, I think. That's just a weird little thing I like in
I think Dante could have easily been in, the way he's designed, I think he could easily have been in the Book of Life. Just the way he looks.
Yeah.
Like he's one character I think that could transition quite easily. I love that one of the twins describes him as he's like if you dropped a sausage on the floor of a barber shop. And I was like, yeah, that's definitely what he looks like. But yeah, absolute genius.
I like a lot of the characters in the spirit world, yes. in the land of the dead. Mm. Like the design. I think one of the things I found is the side character of the family is you see them and immediately you can see their who's who, like straight away. I really like that. Do you have any side characters?
When they're crossing over the bridge, when they've got Miguel, there's like a woman and her child when they're crossing over the bridge to go visit their family. And the kid's like staring and she's like, don't stare. And then she's like,
The police officers are quite funny as well. They're kind of chasing them down. They're quite silly. That each little character has like the character that's just randomly allergic to dogs. And it's just a little gag.
It's like, and I don't have a nose, but here we are.
Yeah, exactly. It's these little funny little flavors of characters that you get to kind of see with interactions, even like the security guards across the bridge. They've got these little bit of flavor. They're not just like, hello, come here, take this. It's like there's a little bit of life to them, ironically.
Yeah.
Intentionally.
I quite like some of the, like you were saying, the similarities between the photos and then the way they look in The Land of the Dead. I quite like the kind of generational things, like Coco is nothing like her mum, but it skipped a generation, so her daughter is just like Imelda. Mm. So she's beating people up with the shoe and saying, no music, no music, you know, this, we don't do the music in this family, you know, all this sort of stuff. Another hole, I'm poking holes in a beautiful film. But part of me was like, if Coco had this diary of all the songs and everything, why wouldn't she go, my dad wrote those?
Yeah.
Why wouldn't she do that? Why wouldn't she do that? And why wouldn't she, once Imelda died, put the photo on the offrender as well? That's another one of my holes I've found.
Yeah. How much did Imelda tell, what's the grandmother's name? You got Coco, what's her daughter's name?
I think they call her Abuelita, which is like
grandma. Which means little grandma.
Yeah, so like Abuelita is like, like she's obviously carrying the hate across, but like Coco doesn't seem like she carries that much hate. Like if Coco's anything like Miguel's mother, who is a bit more calm and a bit more chill about things, it does seem a bit odd.
Being on holiday with my grandmother in the last couple of weeks prior, like I realized how similar I am to my grandmother out of all of my family members. I was like, we've got like a chill level going on. Everyone else is a bit bit like but me and her are kind of like, yeah, we can sit in the sun and read a book. Yeah, let's just sit. We don't have to talk necessarily if we don't want to. We could just chill. And that's what we did for like 2 weeks. I watched her fall asleep a lot of the time. So it was a lovely holiday. I will say that. But I noticed that. And that's when coming back to this, I was like, oh yeah, of course. And again, like the she beats up the mariachi with the shoes, like, no music.
There's one scene that makes me laugh every single time, and it's when he's in the plaza and he's with the mariachi and he's got the guitar in his hand and he passes it back. And the nan, like Abuelita, storms through and she's got like these fucking dench arms. She's like, ooh.
And her eyebrow is just straight and her eyes are dark.
It always makes me laugh. It made me laugh today when I watched it. It's so funny.
Yeah.
Yeah. The family dynamic is done very well. And you can kind of see where Encanto got the idea from. It was almost like Encanto kind of went, hey, what if we had a film like Coco? But instead of a spirit world magic stuff, we have superpowers and hone in deep on family dynamics.
I recognize the voice of the dad of Miguel in this film, and he's in Jane the Virgin.
Oh, okay, cool.
He's the dad in Jane the Virgin.
And that's obviously very...
Which is like, yeah, it's like a telenovela, yeah.
Yeah, I noticed in that as well. I was like, I'm sure like Miguel's parents had more of like something to do with the story, but then when I watched it, I'm like, they're barely in it. Then they're like
two lines not... each.
Yeah, they're like, oh, Miguel, do make shoes, please, just make shoes.
Oh, here's a gift. You can make shoes every single day after school. Oh,
I'm so happy.
Thanks, Dad.
You're really excited about that. Get to be a shoemaker when I'm 10.
Yeah. Oh, thanks. But yeah, so yeah, I thought that because obviously it's about family, but it's more obviously about Coco and Imelda, Abuelita, and the rest of the family kind of plays smaller roles in that. Because they're the ones that are they're just kind of going along with the family trauma. We don't, again, it's just passed down from the generation to generation. But again, I don't see why Coco would pass that down. I you know, it's almost like, you know, she hung out with her grandmother, Abuelita hung out with like Imelda all the time, and Coco's off doing something else or whatever she was doing. You know, maybe she was like Miguel, busy making shoes, just like, fucking hell, but I made these shoes.
Maybe Imelda just lived for ages.
They're going to beat me with a shoe. Do you think they make like special beating shoes for the family? And they're just like...
It's like steel capped.
Yeah.
Put a nail coming out of it. I wonder if like, because Coco lives so long and so old.
Yeah,
she's
pretty old when she dies, isn't she?
I wonder if the family is kind of like, they're quite youthful. So I wonder if Imelda just lived for ages.
Yeah.
And so that's how maybe...
She doesn't look that old though.
No, I thought that when she died...
Because Coco looks... she looks old.
Yeah. She's cute old.
She's so wrinkly.
She is. I love it though. I think that the character design is so good, and like it's so real. And like when she's moving her hand towards the end and she's starting to remember the song and singing it, like, and you think fucking it. And like, I think everyone's had or known somebody that's been so old and like that, or suffered from Alzheimer's or dementia or just been, you know, just horrifically old at this point and, you know, on their last legs. I think everyone can relate to that and see that and know that. And I think that's why everyone is going, right, now you cry. Here it is. We've got you by the heartstring. Same with Up. They just go, now.
Oh my God.
Like,
I can't get through Up without crying in the first 5 minutes.
Mate, I was in bits. I didn't cry. I think I said this on Disney Discussions, but I didn't cry for like 15 years until I saw that. And then I've never stopped crying. I'm crying even now. Crying even now. But it got to a point where my ex-girlfriend was like, shut the fuck up. Like, shut up. Again,
that's why she's an ex. Not nice.
Not the nicest of people. Anyway.
Let boys cry. Let men and boys cry.
Like, she'll be in the land of the forgotten. the land of the forgotten. Next.
Watch her turn into dust.
don't turn me on, Megan. Don't turn me on.
With Coco, whenever I see her, what I like about it as well is that, yeah, it shows, as Dan, as you said, it shows the age and it shows it's taking its toll, but it's not like an overtly, it's not like this really sad, horrible, depressing film. Like I know Disney wouldn't necessarily do that, but they could have laid it on thick and every conversation could have been about, I don't know how Coco's going to do, I don't know if she's going to make it. Mm. How can we take care of her? She's so old. She can't take care of herself. None of that. It's like, oh, come on, Coco. And it's just she's smiling. And like when Miguel thinks about her, she's just there. When he's doing fun things and stuff, and she just smiles and says the odd word, and everyone just loves her being around.
Yeah.
And it just wants to take care of her, and they really respect her, and they love her. And it's just really beautiful. Whereas you see a lot of other films with old people who are dying, and the whole film is going on about how they are dying. They're going to die soon.
And even when she does die in this film, it's
peaceful.
It's peaceful and subtle. It's not in your face.
And she immediately gets to reunite with Hector. Just and that's like
photo on the ofrenda, and then finally they get to be reunited, and you're like, oh, and then it's just really funny to look at because you're like, you're so fucking old.
Yeah.
That's like says this ghost, and then your dad's like,
everyone's like jumping around, river dancing, and she's like
a 100-year-old ghost.
I'm fucked. I was actually listening to the Back to the Filmography Gnomeo and Juliet podcast.
Megan hasn't even listened to that.
Well, yeah, I was sad that I was ill.
It's all right. It's all right. I forgive you. and you were talking about like Derek and extras, I think, on the podcast.
I was talking extras in The Office more so. Yeah.
But you mentioned Derek, and it made me remember. Unlike what it does in this film, which it kind of like, you know, a lot of people are like, oh, don't move her, don't treat her like that, don't, you know, upset her or get her worked up. Mm. But like Miguel is going, no, let's play games, let's do stuff, let's sing, let's wrestle, let's keep her involved. And that's really beautiful that he doesn't see her as just a fragile old woman close to death. He's like, no, let's do stuff together. Even if you don't want to do it, I'm going to tell you about my life. I'm going to do stuff. And, you know, and I had a similar experience where my grandmother this holiday was like, you do talk a lot, don't you? I was like, cheers, Nana. right, thanks. And like, it was joking. She was joking and we were having a good time. But yeah, but I think in Derek, which I didn't enjoy. I like a lot of Ricky Gervais stuff.
I've seen bits of it. Yeah, so
I didn't enjoy it because one is, you know, playing like a handicapped person, and I'm like, it's a bit, I don't know if this is, it's a bit wobbly territory for me, I think, for that. But also they're like, oh, isn't it bad we put old people in a home? And I was like, and then they'll really rack up like the sad music, and I'm like, this is really patronizing to me. This is like, well, if we had funding, if we had carers, if we had more money, then we could certainly look after. You don't want to put somebody in a home, but sometimes you need to do that to facilitate actual care and to pay for it and things. So it just felt a bit preachy and patronizing to me. So I wouldn't watch it, Mike, if you don't. That's just my
Megan
opinion.
Megan hates Ricky Gervais, so.
Perfect. You'll never see it. Don't worry about it.
No.
Now I've turned it off completely right off. A lot of his other stuff is good. Afterlife I liked and most of his
extras. I want to show Megan extras. There's a couple of episodes of that, I think.
And he's not even the main character in extras anyway. No. So you can kind of skip that bits anyway. But I think it is time to compare the two. So as we all know, there are five different categories. So let's start with the first one. Voice acting, more so than acting. So Megan, let's go with you first. Which film do you think features the best acting?
Coco.
And why?
I don't know. I just think it flows better. I also just prefer the fact that it's a predominantly native Spanish-speaking cast. I find it quite jarring that it's Channing Tatum for Joaquin when there's quite a lot of other Spanish-speaking people.
When he grew up with this other kid, and the kid, like Diego Luna, has quite a strong accent.
Yeah, like a really strong accent.
And Channing Tatum doesn't. And it's like, but you grew up in the same town, around the same people all the time. How do you...
How does that
work? Yeah, I like, as great as I like Diego Luna, I think he's a fantastic actor. I think there are bits in this film where the voice acting is a bit iffy, and I just think it's slightly better in Coco.
I'd be in agreement. I'd say, I think it's that kind of thing where Coco, it sounds like everyone in it is a voice actor. More so, you know, I don't think they all are, but it feels like they are.
I think it falls down to the singing for me. Sorry.
Yeah.
I think sometimes the singing can sound a bit jarring in The Book of Life, whereas in Coco, I think it flows naturally more into the actual film, and it sounds like they're actually doing it. Whereas in The Book of Life, it kind of sounds like they've recorded it and done it in post. Do you know what I mean? Like,
that's a good point.
Yeah, that's fair. I think that's fair. Go on.
I was going to say with Book of Life as well is because I think all the women are cast very well. I think that Maria and La Muerta are amazing. I think they knock it out of the park. But I think it is the guys that let it down a little bit. It feels more like, because Ron Perlman's great, but they all just feel like these are actors doing voice roles, whereas in Coco, it felt more like these are voice actors. I know they're not all, strictly speaking, that's the case, but it felt more like that. But I don't know if that's partly because of Coco being all people realistic looking in a way. I know it's still cartoony, but it's all like, it's not like a kid's cartoon epic, everything's moving and that stuff. It's like it's almost like a human tale, but it's animated. Whereas Book of Life is a bit more action-y. So I wonder if that maybe has an impact. But I'd say, yeah, Coco as well.
Okay. I think I've skipped a category, by the way, for some reason. I decided to go straight to acting when usually we go to writing. So I'm doing a bad job on my own thing. But I will say that I think the writing has an effect, quite a large effect on this category. Because I think the as much as I enjoy the humor and the quippy nature and the fun, frenetic and kind of fantastic energy that Book of Life has, it does feel like, you know, cut and paste. Oh, we've got to have a quippy line here. He's got to say this here. This will be funny. This will land well. This joke will land well, as opposed to this emotional beat will land well. I feel like that's more of the focus. And I think because of the way it's moving, you don't get those emotional moments. You don't get to sit with a lot of the performances and the characters. You will get literally a snippet, and then it's like, right, next, move, go, adventure, Sebulba, this, that, Chakal, ah. And I think you're both right. I think Coco has the better acting, and again, the fact that you can get to, like, I don't cry at many films. I'm not a big kind of cryo when it comes to films or having that intense and emotional reaction, and this film gets there for me, and again, right on the beat, on the stroke, where I'm like, this is the bit where I cried last time. Oh look, I'm already crying. Stamped. they've done it again. They've tricked me again. But they've gotten that performance, those performances they've given throughout, combined with everything else, has got me to the point where I'm crying. So again, massively agree wholeheartedly that Coco wins in the acting category. So let's take a step back and go to writing. Mike, writing. Which film has the better writing?
I mean, Book of Life has the more complex writing, I think.
Sure.
I feel like to write that, it would almost be like a Christopher Nolan whiteboard when he's trying to explain like a story, when it's like Memento is back and forth and all that jazz. Like, but I feel like Coco feels like someone had a clear idea what they were doing from the start to the finish, and it never misses a beat. It goes a perfect arc, exactly what it wanted to do. It hits in every way it wanted to. Well, the music is good. Like, something I hadn't even considered that Megan said is, like, the music of Book of Life feels like they stock the audio. You know, it's a different audio production on them singing. Whereas in Coco, I felt like it's literally like talking like now, and then I just pick up a guitar while speaking and start playing, and that's how it feels in Coco. And so where it all just goes so much smoother together, I think, I know it's Disney, but I feel like almost Disney Pixar, they could kind of just do what they wanted from the start. Whereas I feel like Book of Life might have had like, here's a two-thirds of an idea we have, how are we going to finish this? And then lots of different people kind of added to that last third, and it's made it feel a little bit disjointed.
Megan?
I would agree. I think the writing is better in Coco for the same reasons. I think there's just again, I don't have a problem with the Book of Life like plot. I think the layers aren't too messy. I don't have an issue with it. I follow it all. But I think that the writing for Coco is just slightly more coherent as a concept.
More mature, I think it feels.
Yeah.
Mm. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
It's definitely more emotionally intelligent, I think, Coco. Like, it knows, and I think Mike is right. I think I think where Coco is saying, this is what the story needs to be, this is how it should fall, I think Book of Life was going, what song's popular at the moment? What songs do we like? Put that in there for no reason. Like, I like Creep. Put it there. You know, it's kind of feeling like, oh, it feels like a room, it's written by committee as opposed to one person's vision. And again, that's not necessarily a bad thing. You know, a lot of good films have multiple writers and stuff, but it feels like the producers are always kind of dipping their oar in, like, you know, just going, what about this? Or why don't you try that? Or we need this, we need that, we need this. So it feels like it's not quite the sum of its parts, I think. So, yeah, I agree. Again, the writing, I think, to get me to that point of letting my emotions out, even in private, is difficult. So yeah, now this is the category that I think will show and probably could even decide the winner of the whole podcast. So let's hear which film has the best music. Megan.
Coco.
What, talk about it. Why? What do you think?
Coco, full stop.
I love how cocksure you are of your decision. You're like, I know this is, it has to be this, but explain, you know, show us your working.
I think, well, it's also that, so I think the music in Coco is better, again, because they speak, there's like a couple of songs that are completely in Spanish. There's La Llorona, which is the one that the Imelda sings, and then Ernesto sings along with her on stage. Just think that some of the music in Book of Life is a bit naff. And like, even for songs that I do enjoy, I just think it's also just a bit naff. Like the Creep song, I'm not a big fan of it. It also doesn't sound like it's in Diego Luna's range. It sounds like he's finding it quite difficult to sing. Whereas I think there's just like so many more nods to like Mexican culture within the music in Coco, like the gritos, which is the like the yells that they do, is very, yeah, it's very typical to Mexican music and Mexican culture. And there's just like, I don't know, I just as a whole prefer the music in Coco. I think it's better produced.
I feel like the film in Coco, as my chair, I feel like the film Coco is the film is written with the music in tandem, whereas I feel like the music from Book of Life was afterwards. We've got, here's the plot, here's how we're going to structure it, split it apart, here's draft number four. Now when we're just storyboarding, which parts are we going to have the music in? And what songs can we choose? Whereas Coco, obviously, all the songs are original, I think.
I think it also connects to the fact that the music itself is part of the main plot.
Yes.
Whereas in the Book of Life, it's not specifically a main plot line. It's just like a part of his identity. It's a part of his character.
Yeah, yeah.
Whereas in Coco, it's literally the pathway throughout the entirety of the movie. The so there is more of a focus on the music, and therefore, in theory, the music would be better. Is this, because it's integral.
Is this the only Disney Pixar film that's kind of a musical?
Most Disney Pixar films have songs in them.
Yeah, they're normally written by...
Encanto had music.
Yeah, but yeah, before this...
So online I was reading, they don't technically class this as a musical.
Right.
It's like a music... It was something... Guess,
yeah,
it was a
music
ridiculous,
film or something.
It was a weird film. Phrasing where it wasn't like, we're not a musical, but even though they kind of are...
I think it's the same with like Blues Brothers. They don't want to call it a musical because they're performing it. It's not just something they're singing out of the, like, they're not like washing the pots and start singing or something. Yeah,
it's musicaling.
Yeah, it's kind of just like they just break into song for no reason. It's like I'm going to do a performance. I am singing a song. I think that's the main key aspect. I think that they differentiate. But I know John Landis always wanted Blues Brothers can be considered a musical. I would consider it a musical, but I guess there's still some, because I mean, you have plays that are not musicals, but they have music in them and become and the characters do sing and stuff. So I don't know where the dividing line is, and I'm definitely not going to find it right now. but yes, Mike, what about you?
Yeah, Coco for me is superior. I'm not the biggest fan of covers in any way. I think it sounds really dicky, but I feel like they're a bit lazy. I feel like, you know, not anyone can redo covers. You know, there's a way to, you know, change which pitch they're in, to change the instruments, to change the tempo. Like, there's lots of ways you can change covers. You can change a song in a cover that's really well done. But I don't think this is it. I feel like this was an afterthought with Book of Life, whereas I just think Coco has some of the best Disney music. You know, they're not, there's not that many songs from Coco where I'm like Zero to Hero, I'm like, I'm dying to hear that song. But whenever I hear all the music in Coco, I'm like, this is just a really beautiful, it's got that energy to it. It makes me just want to kind of dance around and like clap my hands together and stuff. Whereas certain other Disney films, it's like, okay, this song I like, this song I don't like, this song I like, this song I don't. Coco, it's all like, I just like all of this, just all the sound. I think with Coco, it is such a sensory film. It's all very, very visual, and it's all very, very audio heavy, and it's just so full in that package. And I think that really appeals to me, the visual element of things. Like, you can just listen to the songs on YouTube and just watch the part of the film it's in, and it works so well. The whole Land of the Dead, you know, all of it. You could just spend hours just going around looking at stuff in there. It would be amazing.
I think for me, on a personal level as well, because I'm a Spanish teacher, the music for Coco like resonates with me slightly more, because sometimes, like, I teach the word loco in Spanish, which means crazy. And then kids make that connection and they're like, oh, like un poco loco. And I'm like, yes, exactly like that. Yay. Well done for making that connection. And then they're like, oh, what does that mean? And I'm like, it's a little bit crazy. And then sometimes, like, later on down the line, I might be like, okay, how can we say little? How do we say that? And they're like, oh, you know, a poco loco. And I'm like, yes. So I think for me as well, I've got that like extra little connection with it, because it makes me happy that kids are picking up bits of the words that they hear in these films. And then they're like, ah, there's a connection. It makes sense. I'm like, yay.
That's really sweet. I like that. That's really nice. I think I can't disagree. I'm just going to just agree with you guys all the way through this, I think. The language of Coco is music. The, like we said, it's blended perfectly. You kind of don't know it's about music until it's all about music, I think. Like, you think, oh, what is this? And then eventually you're like, no, this music is life. Life is music. Death is music, in some regards. And it's kind of, yeah, it's just that passion, that lust for life. And it just feeds through. Like, it's like two intertwining rivers that are just side by side all the way through. Coco wouldn't work without the music, and the music wouldn't really work without the rest of the story to connect it. And so, yeah, absolutely. I like Book of Life. I don't mind some of the covers. I think they're used sparingly, luckily. I quite like the original songs. I don't think they're as well written. I will say this. I mean, Coco had a much bigger budget, like 200 million, and Book of Life only had, I think, maybe 70, maybe less. So there is that to consider, but also you can do a lot with less. So, and I think there was probably restrictions there. And again, it was 20th Century Fox, not Disney. And there was, you know, it was a few years before, it was different times. Again, they went out of business. So there's probably a lot of those going on. But yeah, I have to agree. Music, absolutely, 100%. I loved all the numbers. Every single number had something going for it, where Book of Life didn't really have that for me, even though I enjoyed the music and the way you used it. There's another comparison as well. Both characters solve all their problems with a song.
Very nice.
That's also pretty, a connection with High School Musical.
Dan's favorite film.
Stop talking about it. Please. But yeah, wonderful. Yeah. Next up is cinematography. So just the way of the look of the film, the way it was designed. Mike.
This is a hard one because Coco, bigger budget, so immediately has to step up. And also it was made 3 years later. And in animation terms, that's almost like a decade in some cases. You know, you can have two films made 3 years later and they look like there's been a very long time between them. And budget almost always has the biggest impact on animation. It's just one of those things. Sometimes you get some really cool animated stuff with a low budget, but most of the time you can feel it when it's low budget. So that is an issue. But I just think I have to give props to Book of Life because I've not seen a film like it. I've not seen a film where you've got those... The wooden marionette things. I know you mentioned Guillermo del Toro's Pinocchio, which obviously was out fairly recently. I like stop motion, but Book of Life, was it stop motion? Because it looks... I think
what it was it wanted to be a throwback to stop motion. I think that was the idea. The fact that they have like parts and you would move them.
Yeah.
That's the way they look. I think that was them trying to kind of say, hey, stop motion, but not quite. But do you remember these? Did you like these? This is kind of like that. And I think that was what they were trying to do, trying to bridge those two animation styles together in a sense.
And I think it has something to be said that they can do so many different animation styles and there's reason for them. They're not just pointless. It's showing you visually that we're in a different point to where we were before. And I think the character designs are a lot more interesting than Coco. I know that's not cinematography strictly, but like in animation, it's kind of harder to differentiate the two. And I just think that Book of Life has so many cool different parts to it that has to be commended. I think Coco probably does a better job. It's a lot smoother.
Sure.
But I think although Coco's Land of the Dead is incredible to look at, I think they almost had an easier job. Once you've got the quality of those effects down, once you've got that and you've got the humans sort of looking people and the skeletons and things, once you've got that, the rest of it, it looks great, but it's quite steady and slow. Yeah. Whereas Book of Life is so fast moving and there's so much stuff going on. Yeah. And there's so many changes. I think that it's a hard one for me. I'd be inclined to say a draw, but I would almost just on how much they tried, Book of Life might get it a bit more from me, even if they didn't succeed in the long run. I just think the effort was gigantic. So I'm kind of leaning there, I think. But you?
So cinematography is like how it looks, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah. Just the visual kind of representation of the world.
Yeah, I think, again, for me, it's going to be Coco, because I think... when you look at the actual Land of the Dead, like, I think both of them are so stunning, but I am someone that prefers just brighter, vibrant colors. And the cinematography in the Book of Life is just slightly on the like darker side. So for me, I think I just prefer, like, because from like right at the beginning, you've got the papel picado, which is like the little like bunting type things. You've got all of that. You've got the bright flowers. Like, then you've obviously got the bridge and then you go into the Land of the Dead and then you've got all of the bright colors. Like, and you do have elements of that in the Book of Life. It's just that there's like, it's like they've got like a filter just that makes everything slightly as a darker hue, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
So for me, I prefer Coco.
Which is fair. I'm very torn on it.
Yeah.
What about you, Dan?
I'm going to vote for Book of Life just to be even more difficult. I think... the worlds they create, like the Land of the Forgotten, is really fascinating with the grays and the greens, and it's like it looks like it's been sketched on. I love that design. Again, unfortunately, they're very briefly in each world. That's my only problem. But when they enter each area, like the Candlemaker's whole room with all the candles is wonderful and gorgeous. And then when he enters the Land of the Remembered, I love how dynamic it is. Like for me, Coco is a lot of running around. Them just like on foot is just running around. But in Book of Life, when they transition from one area and one scene to another, they're like leaping or falling or dancing or twirling.
The bulb is like the smoke disappearing.
Yeah, exactly. Like there's so many little details. Like, again, there's a lot of kind of, Coco has a lot of references to Pixar, which is like, oh yeah, really nice if you're a Pixar fan. But does it add anything to the world building outside of that? And again, I'm not saying it's not bad world building or visual representation, because it's gorgeous, but I found it not quite as interesting to view in that respect. Like, again, they've got their moments with the Alibri Haze and everything, but I think for me, a visual representation, it's far, I would much rather look at it, even though it's technically kind of more hideous to look at. I find that more kind of interesting and would spend more time looking at it and going, why did they make it so hideous? Like, like, why? What was your decision? Why would you, like, that's more interesting for me. So I will call this one a draw. Not that it really matters anyway. And we'll do one more category, which is direction. Megan, which film was better directed?
It's a full house for Coco. I just think that this is just a better... I think both of them are great films. I just think Coco is just a better movie. I don't really know how to answer this question.
Almost like the whole idea of it from the start, just finish the whole thing.
I just think this film is more well-rounded than the Book of Life is. I just think in every aspect, well, as we've just done every single category, for me, it is just Coco across the board. So
sure.
I think as a whole, it is just a better movie.
No, absolutely.
I agree. I'd say I agree with basically everything Megan said, but I would say to people, like, when watching these two films, it's like, almost watch Book of Life first and then watch Coco. maybe not the other way around.
There is no doubt in my mind that the animators and people that worked on Coco watched Book of Life first. There is no doubt in my mind that it did actively influence Coco. So in a way, we are lucky that they did watch Book of Life to make Coco that much better.
They improve it in certain ways. Yeah,
exactly. And I think it makes a wonderful double bill. But again, I can't disagree with you at all. Coco across the board, really, apart from that one draw. But every other category absolutely smashed it. And it's kind of what I expected, to be fair, because it's a wonderful film. And I think a lot of people will agree with us. I did get one listener comment, which was Rhea, and I asked which film's going to win. And she predicted Coco. So, well done, Rhea. Well done.
We used to do the Disney discussions with us, and those Megan's opinions on Coco.
So. Exactly. So, yeah. So there we go. Wonderful. Yes, that's it, guys. So is there anything? Do you want to plug yourselves, your social media accounts, your podcasts, podcasts we share, all of the other good stuff?
You can find me on Grits Gets Fit on Instagram. I don't really post that much. I kind of am just like...
Your story's more active.
I'm trying to just take a break from social media a whole.
I would like to take a break from the world at the moment because it's all on fucking fire. All of
everything's on fire. We're all on fire.
Everything is on fucking fire. Wars and horrible atrocities going on. So it was nice to actually talk about a couple of lovely films.
Yeah. It was.
But yeah, you can see me on Grits Gets Fit, but I don't really post that much on there, so you'll just see some old pictures. But otherwise, I am on Disney Discussions, so I'll be popping up on random feeds here and now, whenever. I'm broken now. It's got
Social media account can be your friender. It's fine.
Yeah.
When you die, people will just look at it and they'll go,
I'll just go back through the years and watch me progress.
Oh, that's the woman who said, "Oh, it's all right."
Well, that's funny.
Oh, that's all right. That's funny.
That's funny. Oh, that was weird.
Yeah, too weird.
Too weird.
Otherwise, yeah. Patreon, genuine chit chat.
Yeah,
I highly recommend. I was listening to the Evil Dead 2 one the other day. Highly disagree with Megan's opinion on that film.
Oh, yes.
Well, because I didn't like it.
Yes,
you
yes.
hated it.
Yes. 100%.
I hate that film.
It's like, I was like,
half the time,
like,
I don't even remember what I've said in the
I was like, I respect it. I get what you're saying, but I completely disagree.
And that's what I was like the whole time. I was like, okay, what was her rating? I was like 5, and I was like 8. I was like, that film's amazing. She's like, how do you think that? I'm like, how do you think that?
They're weird.
It was, and we're doing spooky season at the moment over on Patreon. Mm-hmm. So we're doing all the Nightmare on Elm Street films. Yes. So there's 9 of them. So we're going to be doing it, believe it or not.
Yes.
Yeah. There only probably needs to be 3, but there are 9. And so we're watching those. We watched Scream 6. And last year we watched the other 5 Scream films. Patreon.com/genuinechitchat. That's £1 a month. That's what we have to give.
Oh my gosh.
You get immediate access to over 190 episodes of Afterthoughts and about 100.
Guys, it's cheap. It's cheaper than my Patreon. So,
but also go to Dan's Patreon because I'm a patron supporter of Dan.
Yes. And so I love Mike.
The tiny pods. I love it when it's just you for 30 minutes or so just chatting about like little funny little comic that you like or something like that. It's always fun when you're by yourself. I like all your guests.
I find it less fun when I'm by myself, but I do them anyway.
Oh, it's less fun, but it's great to watch.
as long as you enjoy them. I've recently done Stan Lee reinterprets all the DC heroes. So I've done a ton of videos on that. So if you want to join the Patreon, that's on there. What about you, Mike, and your social media handles?
At Genuine Chit Chat on Instagram, Twitter, which is now X, Facebook, and I post a little bit on TikTok. YouTube.com/genuinechitchat as well. Basically, just find me on social media. You can find Genuine Chit Chat or Star Wars Comics and Canon, basically anywhere. Obviously, check out Disney Discussions. Mm-hmm. Me and Dan have, I think it's a shared playlist of Disney Discussions.
Yes, where
our Disney Discussion episodes are in there, including episode 0, which was the episode that Dan spoke about with Natalie. That was like 3 and a bit hours long.
Our feminist Disney podcast. If that sounds like your bag, and I don't think it's a lot of people's, but people did.
It was great fun in bits.
Yeah,
just sit down and listen to four hours of it. It's kind of bits and pieces throughout the day.
It was everyone's podcast Everest. I remember when it came out. Everyone's like, "I've done it. I'm there. I've made it.
I got to the end."
Very good.
Myself and Megan, Patreon stuff, but also listen to my interviews with lots of people about a wide variety of things, and all good fun. Thank you, sir.
Genuine chit chat with interesting people. Absolutely. Right. me, you can find me at spiderdanthesecretballs.com. I'm going to do the brief version of this because we have run over a little bit. Please subscribe to the Pop Culture Collective as well, the newsletter, to find out what myself, Comics in Motion, Genuine Chit Chat, Femme on Film, and all the other related podcasts are doing week by week. I'd like to thank my patrons on Patreon. I am Jax Musing, Simon Cotton, Paul Meller, Max Byrne, Mike Burton, Angry Andy, Sonia Todd, Tony Farina, Math, Scott Hodgson, and Rhea Carrigan. And for their continuing donations, it is very much appreciated and helps Prattle World keep on turning. And if you ever find yourself in a position to help the podcast, please consider it. There is a special Rhea-specific podcast coming out soon that I'm going to do another puny pod for, because I know she likes a particular film I've got a comic on. So you keep an eye out, you people. There's going to be some good stuff coming, good content. But I hope you are all thinking and remembering the Day of the Dead, and maybe thinking about your loved ones and the history and all of the good things that come with this holiday. So I've definitely enjoyed talking about this subject, and I've really enjoyed having you guys on again to talk about a slightly more enjoyable pair of films than the last time we talked. So yes, but always wonderful guests as always, but thank you. And as always, prepare for prattle.